We arrive here today to debate at social distances from each other.
There's no doubt that the old politics of the two-party system is now gone and over.
I don't need lectures from you or anybody on the Sinn Féin side of the house.
We're very reluctant to say what's red lines, but we do have to take climate seriously.
There's going to be constant criticism, there's going to be a lot of disappointment, and whoever goes into government is going to be unpopular.
Okay. Hello and you're very welcome to Your Politics podcast from RTE News. I'm Paul Cunningham. Joining me today is RTE's political correspondent, Micheál Lehane.
Hello, Paul.
In the comments from last week, someone said, Paul, you've done a great job in journalism, but you've never done a greater job in trolling Micheál Lehane.
I know who said that. It's a very precise niche comment.
Is it? There's someone going to get stuffed later on. Anyway, our political guest today is Padraig Tobin, the Meath West TD and also leader of AIMTU. Padraig, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Let's get down to business. We have, as we speak, the Cabinet Economics Committee, which is meeting to consider what it's going to do about things like the PUP, the pandemic unemployment payment, and the possibility of tapering off that payment as the economy opens up and people go back to their jobs. What's your sense of what you think they should be doing?
Well, I suppose, first of all, it is eye-watering, the amount of money that is being spent on the PUP at the moment. So $7.5 billion has been spent on the PUP, about $5 billion last year. And right now, from the PQs that I've received, there's about €500 million a month being spent. So there's an obvious difficulty for the state. I think the state has taken on about €40 billion of debt since the start of this crisis, and debt is a disaster for a country because it steals from future investment. For me, I think there's two things that need to be taken into consideration. The first one is the government have shut down for far too long and far too severely. If you compare and contrast us with any other European country, we are a radical outlier in the level of shutdown. Thankfully, a large number of the older people and the vaccinated the exposed individuals have been vaccinated. So the risk is far less within society. And thankfully, the numbers in hospitals are extremely low at the moment. Restrictions are for to protect the hospitals getting overwhelmed, and that's not the case. And that's why we in AIMTU will be calling for all hospitality, for example, to open up on the 2nd of June together and under the same regulations. And in doing that, in many ways, you would solve the problem with regards to the significant debt that's been built up, and you'd solve the problem with regards to making sure that workers have proper incomes coming into their homes.
But what would you say to people who say the reason why the hospitals have not been overwhelmed and we're not seeing those terrible daily figures in ICU and all the rest of it is because we have had those restrictions? In other words, we've stopped people mixing, therefore hospitals are able to operate.
No, listen, I admit that during the last 14 months, there have been times where restrictions were absolutely necessary. There's no doubt, for example, the January was one of those was one of those occasions. But this is not December. It's not January. The numbers are nowhere near what they were like. And significantly, the game changer here is that so many of the people who are in the older age groups and the vulnerable age groups, they have been vaccinated. So it's not in a comparable time whatsoever. Listen, we may not be out of the woods. We need to be careful. But what we're suggesting is that a pub in a that's serving a pint, that pint is no more homicidal than a pint that's being served indoors in a hotel. That chicken goujons that have been served in a pub or a restaurant are no more malevolent than chicken goujons that are served in a hotel. Okay. And a little bit of common sense is needed now.
Can I put it to you, they're being slightly facetious insofar as that being outside is safer than being inside. And if you're inside for a long period and consuming alcohol, then it's going to be more dangerous.
Yep. Listen, there are risks involved, but obviously the government have come to a decision to allow for people to eat and drink in hotels on the 2nd of June inside. And yet it's a week later till restaurants and pubs can serve outside, and they still haven't been given a date as far as I understand. And some people are even talking about the potential for late July or August. And if you take that into consideration, that means that, you know, a sector of society that has been closed pretty much for 400 days are being told that they can kiss goodbye to the summer season of 2021. And, you know, we're talking about phenomenal economic hardship for people. We're talking about poverty for people. And those two things are not without risk either in terms of obviously life and health and mental health. So, you know, given the fact that thankfully hospital admissions and ICU are so low, and I believe that they should be the key performance indicators with regards to the government's policies. But given that they're so low right now, it is illogical to think that hospitality can't open under the same regulations.
What do you think of the question relating to the Indian variant becoming dominant in the UK? And is there a parallel between what happened in November and December of last year, in which we allowed the UK variant come into Ireland with such disastrous consequences in January, February, that if we open up too fast, too quickly, we could replicate that and have the Indian variant become dominant in Ireland and having devastating consequences in a matter of weeks?
Well, first of all, AIM2's policy has always been to open up the internal Irish economy as best we can, as safely as we can, at any given moment in time. That's why I had rows with Eamon Ryan in December that the airports weren't protected. I said to him, tens of thousands of people are going to come home for Christmas, Eamon. We need to protect people, the airports, in relation to that. But the government, unfortunately, refused. The Indian variant was first found in, I think, early April in this state. And India wasn't put onto the mandatory quarantine list until late April. So, what, like, you know, if these are the obvious, simple, logical steps that you would take, but they weren't taken. Thankfully, most of the evidence is saying that the existing vaccines are able to protect people from the Indian variant, which should also give us a reason for hope and a reason to be able to proceed with opening up.
But isn't it the case that we heard today in the Doyle that the big plans that the Johnson & Johnson single-shot vaccine was going to be able to do the heavy lifting in the month of June is now in question, where we may only get 10% of the supply we expected rather than the 100%?
Well, like, it's amazing. Today we have a tale of two Irelands. If you look in the headlines in the north of Ireland, they're saying that their vaccine portal is open to everybody over the age of 18. But in the south of Ireland, we have this non-stop repetition of vaccines stalled, objectives and targets not being met. From the very start of this process, like, the vaccines were introduced into Ireland, I think, the day after St. Stephen's Day. It was 2 weeks into January before they were first introduced into nursing homes. When the first 77,000 vaccines were actually dispensed, only 10% of those actually went into nursing homes. And I remember in January talking to so many nursing homes where people were getting the vaccine on the same day that they were getting the British variant. And there was a spike in mortality as a result of people just not getting the vaccines in time. You know, Ireland has resisted, this government has resisted in accessing vaccines outside of the European supply chain from the very start. AIM2 have been calling for the government to procure in addition to the European supply chain, such as companies like Germany and Denmark and Austria. And as well, I asked the Taoiseach a dozen times, you know, how far did he push Joe Biden, for example, with regards to seeing could we procure vaccines from the States? And of course, Micheál has never answered that question. So there are two tales of different procurements, north and south, and they're very different.
But can you put a figure on it? Like, we're talking about opening up the country on the basis of vaccinations, and yet there's still huge questions over the volume of vaccinations that were going to be received. Do you, as the party leader, have a figure to say, well, if we hit 60% of the population being vaccinated or receiving their first vaccination, therefore you will be able to open XYZ? Have you laid it out?
Well, first of all, we've said very clearly that hospital admissions and ICU admissions are the key indicator. And, you know, right now there are 100 people within hospital who have COVID. And that's, I think, less than 1% of all people within hospitals in the state. It is a tiny figure. You know, and when I think about the amount of people in this country who have cancer, who have mental health illness, who have heart disease or stroke, those numbers are actually far more and are achieving far less attention from the health service. I asked Micheál Martin, when was the health service going to fully open up for people with cancer services? And he said they won't open up fully until the end of the year. And this is despite the fact that we have medical professionals telling us that there is a tidal wave of far more advanced cancers hitting the health service at the moment. You know, that I think we really have to inject a little bit of common sense, a little bit of perspective into Ireland at the moment. Restrictions are for protecting the health service from being overwhelmed. They have no other purpose.
Yeah.
When the health service is not being overwhelmed, those restrictions can be eased.
But just on that, do you have a figure or not? Just on
no, I think we're past. I think that
it's already been exceeded. Like.
I actually think that the relevant age cohorts and individuals who have vulnerabilities in terms of long term conditions, in the main, have been met, and I do believe that we need to absolutely ramp up the delivery of vaccines to those who want them. But I think we have passed the point to where we can open up, not without, I would suggest that there should be still regulation, there should be social distancing, and that, you know, hotels and restaurants and pubs should operate within 2 metres in distance if they can from each other. I'm not saying that we ditch all of that, but I'm saying get people back to work, make sure people can make a living, feed their family, pay their rent, and pay for healthcare.
Earlier on, you mentioned that, you know, Ireland was sort of an outlier in relation to restrictions, given the length and severity of what's taken place here. And earlier on in the Dáil, you were also talking about this, that this was something, I think it was yesterday, you were saying was underanalyzed by both the political and media class. And it struck me that I was listening, if you listen to Morning Ireland, they're constantly bringing in people from Spain and Germany. If you listen to Claire Byrne on RT Radio 1, same thing. I was just wondering where that was coming from.
Well, I suppose where it comes from is that for me, normally when we talk about any particular issue, we would talk, well, what's the best case scenario? What's the best in class? What are other countries doing, for example, so we can get a yardstick to what we're achieving? And it, you know, Ireland has had about 230 work place closure days so far, which is a multiple of many European countries, and is by far the highest. And that fact alone is a question which, you know, I think the government, it indicates that the government have significantly made a mistake and haven't been as effective as they should be. And I very seldom hear the government actually pushed to the pin of their collar with regards to the fact that lockdown has been so restrictive and so long here. Germany has had roughly the same level of mortality and morbidity with a fraction of the level of workplace lockdown that we've had here. That's a really significant element of the government's actions. And I don't believe that the government have been pushed or challenged significantly on it. And, you know, while we do hear of other countries and, you know, we don't really measure ourselves on a regular basis, I think, in the restriction totality against other countries. And I do think Ireland is a small country. Sometimes we're a little bit inward looking. I definitely think the political class in Ireland suffers from groupthink. I said yesterday that, you know, the Irish political system is a petri dish for groupthink. You know, when the government were going down probably the most restricted route in Europe, if not the world, you had the opposition in this country actually egging them on to go further, calling for zero COVID. And indeed, you know, the People Before Profits, the Labour Party and the Sock Dems were all calling for a not opening up, not reducing restrictions beyond level 5 until we get to a case number less than 10 a day. Now, it's not likely that we'll have a case number of less than 10 a day within the next 4, 5 or 6 months. So if you follow their logic, the opposition, who should be holding the government to account, you know, this country would remain in severe lockdown, you know, potentially until Christmas. And actually, AIM2 was the only political party, the smallest, the newest political party, that was actually challenging that groupthink left, right and centre. And I think we need more of that in this country, not less.
Where do you stand on the question of mandatory hotel quarantine today?
I believe that mandatory hotel quarantine has a role, and I do think that we should be looking at variants and making sure that we prevent variants coming in into the country. But I think that where you have a system where other countries and this country have reduced levels of the illness and the levels of and have high levels of vaccinations, then in those cases there should be no need to mandatory quarantine these states at this moment in time.
Given you're a 32-party county, were you ever considering the possibility that given earlier on when the what was so-called the B117, the UK variant, was being transmitted and becoming dominant here, that anything could have been done along the border to restrict movement and protect the population of the Republic of Ireland?
No, I would have never agreed to that. And I'll tell you, Paul, I was the frustration I felt during most of the last year in relation to this was incredible, because I put it to the Taoiseach a number of times. Where was the location of all Ireland's cooperation on COVID? You know, like, which department did it exist? Was it in the Taoiseach's department? Was it in the Department of Foreign Affairs? And or was it in the Department of Health? It didn't exist. I asked, where was the Secretariat, the people who were working on a daily basis to make sure that we were getting this island correct? It didn't exist. You know, we've had Robert Swan stand up in this Stormont and complain about the fact that he's learning about variants and he's learning about travel and he's learning about other aspects of government's plan through the media. That, you know, it was nearly the last thing on the southern establishment's mind was to contact even the northern.
Are you overstating what was possible, particularly given that the Democratic Unionist Party was the largest party within the executive?
Well, first of all, The government didn't exceed or didn't even approach what was possible. There's no doubt. I understand that there's going to be pushback at times from the DUP. But when you have a Ulster Unionist Party leader and the Minister for Health criticising the Southern government for the lack of cooperation north-south, well, that just turns the world upside down, does it not? And at a time when actually, you know, the Southern government had a logical argument with regards north-south cooperation, when there's foot and mouth disease, this country was considered to be an epidemiological unit. And yet it never happened. And it was one of the major weaknesses in this country. There's been a number of major weaknesses. And one, if I can just touch on, and I mentioned in my Dáil speech, 56% of the people who died of COVID in this state contracted COVID in either a hospital or a nursing home. The majority of people contacted them in two locations, both either run by this government or regulated by this government. Now, the fact that we've had the whole country grind to a halt, and yet the most dangerous place was in those spaces that the government has a massive influence over, is also a cause of deep concern. And I believe there needs to be an investigation with regards how this government handled COVID in its economic and health aspects over the last 14 or 15 months.
Father, just Michal here, just you were talking about the difference in death rates with Germany compared to Ireland. There is a difference, though, in the mortality rate resulting from COVID, though, isn't it? Ireland is less than Germany. I mean, I think there was a John Hopkins University study that showed Ireland was around 1.9% of cases, with Germany about 2.4%, and small in percentage terms, but it's a lot of people kept alive as a result of the interventions. Surely, for that reason, would you say, from a government point of view and from a Dáil point of view, it was worth it?
Well, first of all, the protection of people's lives absolutely was the ultimate objective of any government and any political party. And we supported the government at the start of this process, and we would have supported the government in January in that period also. But I will say that if you look at this, there's lots of different reasons why countries, for example, had different mortality rates. Some of them were on the basis of the healthcare system. Now, in this country, unfortunately, I believe, didn't invest enough money into the healthcare system either before the crisis or during the crisis.
But wasn't that the point then? That no doubt was true, and there's OECD studies to show it. But as a result of that, you needed the intervention of the economic lockdown to try and safeguard what was a health system that was riddled with flaws on the way into this.
So we're not talking about a binary question here. What AIM2 is talking about is the fact that the government proceeded with it far too long and far too seriously. So I'll give an example. Outside of Ireland, I don't think any other country locked down construction to the same level. Construction, the building of homes, is a life and death issue. Last year in Dublin, 79 people died in homelessness in Dublin. So far in Dublin alone, about 38 people have died in homelessness. Yet there were 10,000 homes not built at the start of this year due to the fact that the government has probably the most restrictive construction policy in the whole of Europe. Now, I believe that absolutely the big industrial construction sites should have been closed at the start of the year. But for me, that there was a practical logic to letting a Chippy or a Blocky or a Sparky maybe on their own or with one other person into a building which may not have had windows on it, for example, in the periods of late February and into March, which would allow for homes to get built, which would, it shocks me that the government and the opposition, as if they were a choir, very quickly stated that housing was the number one issue facing this country. Yet all of the opposition, Bahrain too, and the government agreed with the full lockdown and closure of the construction industry for a quarter of this year. So, you know, there were other elements of society that were put significantly at risk. And I'll point to the fact with regards cancer and healthcare, and that's a very, very serious issue. Myself, I was unlucky enough to catch or to get cancer at the start of last year. My treatment probably was delayed by 2 or 3 or 4 months as a result of that lockdown. And thankfully, I've had good news with regards to that, and I've come out the other side. But there are thousands of other people. Every day, 480 people will get cancer. Mm-hmm. Every day, 24 people will die of cancer in this country. And yet, we still do not have cancer services up and running. So, you know, absolutely.
There was an emergency, though. I mean, and the notion that there could have been absolute certainty and sure-footedness throughout this, which you seem to be presenting, does to most observers, and I think the general public, judging by the opinion poll data that is available, that does seem a little unlikely. It was a crisis and there was reactions within it, surely.
No, like, there's no doubt that there is an absence of certainty in this situation. And there's no doubt that in a crisis like this, that the governments are simply not going to get everything right. But it is also true that we can measure ourselves against every other Western European country. And, you know, it definitely rings alarm bells in my mind and definitely many people in the public when Ireland's approach has been different than every other European country. And it has been starkly different. And for those reasons, I do think that the government have been slow. And just the final point on it, today, 100 people in totality are in the hospital services throughout the country. And yet, we are still talking about hospitality not opening till maybe mid-July. And I just think that's incredible.
Just one last question, Pater, and it just relates to another topic you're on your feet on. This related to the ongoing movement of the Dáil to Convention Centre Dublin. And the public health advice which has been given to the Oireachtas and to the Cean Comhairle is that it should stay there. Why are you suggesting they go against public health advice?
Well, I just think it's incredible that we are paying €25,000 a day for a convention centre that has 2,000 seats, where in a typical debate, there's probably between a half a dozen and a dozen TDs sitting in it. And yet we have, you know, the
Dáil. But it's the voting, I guess, isn't
available.
It?
Yeah, and to be honest, if it was a case of voting, I think that you could find a practical solution to people being able to vote either in Leinster House, or even if it took, you know, just an hour to go down to the convention centre to do the block voting, that could be achieved as well. And, you know, in my own county, a special school has had to cut hot meals for children with disabilities due to the fact that its funding has been stopped. At the same time, where €5,000 a day is being spent on providing a restaurant for well-fed and well-paid TDs and ministers in Leinster House. Like, there's a chasm in the difference between the experience of the elected representation of this country and the people that they're supposed to represent. And the fact that the convention centre, you know, a big portion, probably the majority of TDs are actually already vaccinated, who are, you know, who are, you know, in a very, very safe place at this moment in time. And even if it took just to roll out the rest of the vaccines for the staff and the rest of the TDs there, that would be a common sense approach to actually saving the country some money so we can use that money for people who really need it.
Pather, judging by a report Tommy Mescal did on this from Orkney Ireland this morning, that does seem to be a majority political view. But where do you think the impediment lies in bringing proceedings back to Leinster House?
Well, obviously, it's a decision by the business committee, and I imagine there's a cautiousness with regards to this. But some people have, I suppose, hoped to divorce this decision from the political realm. And I don't think that we can do that. I think that the responsibility
is on... What does that mean? That's an interesting phrase. Divorcing it from the political realm. Please do tell.
Well, what I mean by that is like the locus of the decision-making is in the business committee. And in many ways, the political parties are blaming the business committee for it. And yet... the business committee is made up of representatives of the political parties. So you can't have it both ways. You can't be, you know, representatives on a committee and have a minority on the committee, and yet seemingly the majority of the Dáil wants to move back to Leinster House. It's impossible to achieve both things at the same time. And, you know, I do think that people feel a lack of common sense and a lack of practicality amongst the political class, and we need to return that fast.
Peter Tobin.
Your group colleague, if not party colleague, Dennis Nocton, was making the point, though, it has benefited politicians' health and they haven't got the COVID stone walking up and down from the convention centre. Have you observed that?
Well, to be honest, I'm lucky. I cycle in from Castleknockav every day into Leinster House, so that's kind of helped a little bit for the last while, but... yeah, it'd be no harm to keep our TDs trim. An election might help in that way too.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves now. Listen, Pádraig Tobin, Meath West TD and Aintu leader, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you.
We are also joined by Sandra Hurley now of our political unit. Sandra, you were tuning in to the Minister for Health, who was giving an update to the Dáil this morning on the question of vaccines and all other stuff. What was the main points that you found?
Yes, I think the main area of interest was that Stephen Donnelly said that it was not clear whether the government would reach this target of 82% of adults having one dose of the vaccine by the end of June. And the reason for that was because of this big question mark over the Johnson & Johnson deliveries in particular during that month. But also there's a problem with AstraZeneca. And I don't think it was a total bombshell, as Alan Kelly later said, because we did know that.
He likes bombshells, though.
Yeah, it likes to bring a little bit of drama sometimes, perhaps. But we did know that there was going to be a problem with the Johnson & Johnson deliveries in June. The vast majority of the deliveries for that quarter, as they say, was to be in June. But we've known for some time there was a problem with it. But what we got today was the scale of the problem, I suppose, because Stephen Donnelly put figures on it. So 470,000 Johnson & Johnson doses were supposed to come in June. Worst case scenario, that drops to 60,000. So that is huge, potentially 400,000 fewer doses of the one dose vaccine. So they certainly won't reach the other target of 55% of adults having being fully vaccinated by the end of June. Johnson & Johnson was going to be the workhorse that was going to do a lot of the heavy lifting there, and they may not reach the 82%. Is this a big problem? Well, Leo Varadkar seemed to say that really they'd probably get to the targets a few weeks later. And we're also hearing that it's not going to have an effect on the reopening plans to be announced tomorrow, and that NPHET probably were aware of it, I think, to some extent. So it certainly has delivered the main news line today. But I think in the bigger scheme of things, there's a lot of confidence in government around the fact that they have accelerated the vaccination program, 300,000 doses last week, and they're hoping to get to 400,000 a week over the course of June. And so really it is full steam ahead on that front.
I mean, it is amazing the range you just described there between 470,000 possible J&J vaccines arriving and 60,000. And if I remember correctly, the minister was also saying there was question marks over AstraZeneca, and he wasn't able to give a figure on what might land next month because they haven't received the information. I mean, when you've got that level of uncertainty going on, it must be damn hard to get a vaccine program, not off the ground, but like continuing to flow as effectively has been this month.
Yes, exactly. And the other thing you'd have to hand it to the HSE is that last week and this week, during the course of the cyber attack, they have kept the vaccination program going completely. That seems to have been absolutely prioritised within the services, and we know so many other areas have been badly hit. So it has been difficult, but it is a factor outside the government's remit. So therefore, they have got the cover for it. There isn't a whole lot they can do in terms of supply, but we are getting this giant Pfizer delivery early next month. And it now looks like that a lot of the remaining people waiting to be vaccinated will get those mRNA vaccines.
And Micheál, I mean, one thing the government could do if it's uncertain about the vaccine rollout is maybe hold back on opening up hospitality if you're not quite certain that as many people are going to be vaccinated as you thought of.
Yeah, but I suppose it is fairly cautious, isn't it? I mean, June the 2nd for the hotels, then the 7th for outdoor restaurants and bars. And then while there seemed to have been some optimism at some point that perhaps it could be the final days of June for indoor hospitality, as of this evening, that doesn't seem likely now. It looks like it's being pushed out to some point in July again. So for all those reasons, perhaps there is a bit of space there. I think what the government seemed to be pointing to in tomorrow's announcement, by the looks of it, is outdoor events, music events and sports events, and people being able to attend those, that would be a significant change, trialled through June and then perhaps quite big numbers in July. As well as that, things like international travel, the return of that unimpeded at some point in mid-July is a possibility. It's those areas, and I suppose things they would say are still opening up relatively slowly.
Yeah, I mean, the mood music still seems to be good. Is that a straight up fact?
It does seem to be good. And I suppose there is no doubt that NPHET would have known about this particular issue with the vaccine levels. Government, and that's euphonous of them in their wording that they're using, do say, well, if you look at that target, which of course a target they stuck to, that was made in the dark days of late winter, early spring, when very few people had been vaccinated and it was about giving hope and that it'll only be missed by a few weeks. But if it were to be missed by a certain number of weeks, I suppose the impact, particularly on the hospitality sector, if it pushes back indoor dining, which is going to be a key part of any domestic tourist season, well, then that would be damaging for government. And I don't think either the opposition or themselves have been fully able to assess what has been revealed today yet.
I mean, Sandra, it's interesting that when it came to leaders' questions today, which were being taken by the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, that Alan Kelly was going on the question of vaccines, but Sinn Féin, they wanted to talk about the question of insurance. And you had the independent TD, Michael Collins, wanted to talk about roads in West Cork. Once again, a sense that the opposition is shifting away from trying to go after the government on vaccines. The will doesn't seem to be there.
Yes, and I think it does get back to that point that supply is out of the control of the government, and there's not much political capital to be made of that. It's not a mess of the government's making. And I think overall, there is a feeling that the vaccination programme is going really well. So, you know, there are other issues, I suppose. The other plan that we're going to hear about early next week is in relation to the income and business supports. Now, we are told that Leo Varadkar helpfully told his parliamentary party meeting last night that these are going to continue untouched into the autumn. Now, he declined to repeat that in the Dáil today when he was asked at one point. But that is the indication now from government that we had been told there was going to be no cliff edge, but they're talking about extending it now probably through until October. So that pushes that out politically as well. The hope in government would be that the reopening would take a huge number of individuals and businesses off these supports, and it essentially pushes the problem down the road.
Micheál Lehane, was there anything else that floated your boat this week in the Oireachtas?
No, I thought on those Leo Varadkar comments, I think his colleagues in the Department of Finance and Public Expenditure probably may not have felt very comfortable with them, because I do think that those discussions that get underway this evening and into next Tuesday, as Sandra was saying, they're probably not quite as clear-cut as the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party might have understood them, that you will see some adjustments. It seems inevitable with some of the supports through the summer months, but equally, the major point is the same, and the government won't risk a political backlash in that period where the economy is recovering for both economic reasons and political reasons.
But isn't that the point of a leader, to send a burning arrow of the direction which you tend to follow and get the rest of the team just to sort of do the hard yards then?
I suppose it is. It's also about being the one to deliver the good news, isn't it?
Funny that.
I thought interesting from the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party meeting as well, Padraig Tobin and the likes have all been talking about no difference between a pint in a hotel or in a bar, and would you be able to have one on the 2nd of June and not one elsewhere.
Padraig actually had two pictures. There was a pint on one table, inside and one pint
if
outside.
If Kenny was here now, he could meet the man with two pints. But
and can we throw in the nut roast as
that's
well?
That's it, that's what I'm getting to. Charlie Flanagan.
I just stole his lines.
Charlie Flanagan declaring his pooch on for nut roast. I mean,
Yeah.
Interesting.
Didn't see it coming.
I didn't see that one coming at all. No. Either. No. Anyone say anything this week which annoyed the hell out of you?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Yes. Percentile.
Who was using that?
Pa Daly of Rock Street Tralee instead of, well, I don't know. Percentile instead of percentage. Monies instead of monies. I don't get it.
No. Sandra? Anything?
Well, unlike Micheál this week, I've found everything to be perfectly fine and I haven't taken offence at any terminology.
Were you cognizant of everything?
Yes,
Norma Foley is using cognizant again now.
Yeah,
she's clearly not listening to this podcast or what you're saying.
She's not cognizant of the podcast.
Okay, let's not talk ourselves down anymore. Let's draw a close to it immediately. I'd like to thank RT's political correspondent, Micheál Lehane, political reporter, Sandra Hurley, and our political guest. And that was Pádraig Tobin, in the Meath West TD and Aintu leader. That's all we have for you this week. Please do tune in next week.